accession number 21278, reel 5.
Cliff Pember, reel 5. So, you were seeing the German troops coming out of Denmark and Norway, is that right? Yeah. So what was their attitude? I mean, they were handing in their arms to you, were they?
A lot of them were glad, I think. But they didn't know what to expect when they got home. Because all the destruction in Germany was terrible, mate.
Had you seen much of that? Because, I mean, Hamburg...
I did after the war, yeah.
Yeah, but not up to that point.
Well, you know, but when the Rhine crossing, I seen a lot of it there, like, you know. Where Wesel was absolutely destroyed, like, where we went across. But otherwise, going through Germany, we didn't do much damage. But probably the RAF done a lot, like. But as I say, we never met much resistance in Germany at all.
So, the DP camps, did you do any...
After the war, yes. The displaced persons, we used to do guards on them to stop them getting out. But then, when they were due to go home, like you separated them off, take them down to the station, put them on the train, and think that's it, now they're gone. Next day, we were back in the bloody camp. They didn't want to go home, like. They didn't want to go back to Poland or wherever they come from, like.
Where did they want to go, you
know? Poland was a lot, which I seen. But you put them on the train and, probably as soon as the train slowed down, they jump off and get back to the camp, like.
So where did they want to go? Did they want to stay?
They wanted to stop where they were.
Because
I think most of them were volunteers, weren't they? They say they were displaced persons, but I think a lot of them volunteered for labour work in Germany, like. And the Germans kept them in these camps, which they called displaced persons, like. But I think they were labour camps more than anything.
Yeah.
To help the German war machine, like.
Right, right, okay. I mean, there was the chance after the VE Day that you could have been sent to the Far East.
Yeah. Well,
what did you think about
when the war finished, I got transferred from the 2nd 5th and 4th to the 1st 5th and 4th. When I got down to the 1st 5th and 4th, I was there for about a week, they sent me home on leave. I came home on leave. I goes back now. About a month or a couple of weeks later, I looked at the list again. I was sent home on leave again. I didn't say nothing, so I had no money, like, but I came home. And when I joined the regiment after, they sent me home on embarkation leave.
Right.
That was in, when did the Japanese war finish? In August, wasn't it? But just before August, they sent me home and on embarkation leave.
Right.
So, when I was home on that embarkation leave, the Japanese war finished. So anyway, I had to report back to Osnabrück, where the 1st 5th and 4th were, like. When I got back there, they told me that the advance party of the 5th and 4th had already gone to America. Because the 1st 5th and 4th worked with the American 1st Army in the invasion of Normandy and that, because they had flame-throwing tanks. And what they're telling me, I don't know how true it was, that they wanted the 5th and 4th to go with the 1st American Army to do an invasion on the Japanese mainland. But the war finished. So the advance party was still over there. So if the war had lasted a couple of more months, I'd probably be in America. But anyway, when the war finished, they sent me a letter to say report back to Osnabrück, like. I reported back to Osnabrück then. And in the end, I got transferred then to the Royal Scots Greys.
Oh, right, yeah.
They disbanded the 5th and 4th for Yeomanry then.
So
I was stationed in Lüneburg, Hanover, not far from Hanover, when they disbanded the 1st 5th and 4th.
Right. So you went to the Royal Scots Greys.
After that, then.
That must have seemed quite different, was it?
It was up at Lüneburg, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I was on Lüneburg East training.
Oh, right, yeah. So what were you doing? You were still in tanks?
Still in the tanks, yeah.
Yeah. So what did you think you were training for?
Well, I don't know, just killing time, I expect, in case the Russians come over the Elbe or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that was their biggest fear, like.
Mm. So you were quite aware that the Russians were over there?
Because they kept on switching the power off. The power station was the other side of the Elbe, you know, and the power used to go off because I was in the barracks, the big barracks at Lüneburg. And I was there for a while until I got the mob
like. Right. So what was the barracks at Lüneburg like? Was this a German army barracks?
German army barracks, yeah.
Nice ones?
Yeah, nice ones, yeah.
Big what ones, also brick built.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, good. Mm. Everything was good there.
So you must have had quite a lot of time to kill. Did you do sport or, you know,
Well, the Royal Scots Greys were famous for their sports facilities. Because they had royalties off the Royals Grey cigarettes, didn't they?
Oh, did they?
They used to get the royalties off them. And their PRI was fantastic. Mm-hmm. If you want to play tennis, you can go and play tennis. Mm-hmm. But you had all the equipment to play with. Mm-hmm. If you want to play rugby, you could play rugby. All the sports.
Really?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the Sergeant Major there, was a bloke by the name of Bob Innes. Mm-hmm. And he wanted me to sign on. Just because I played rugby for the regiment as well. That's all he wanted me to stop on for. I was telling the wife, well, I was married then, like, and I was telling the wife, and she said, do come home, but you stop up there. Mm. Anyway, I'm glad I didn't, because they ended up in Korea, didn't they?
Yeah.
The Royal Scots Greys.
Did you do any educational or vocational courses while you were
well,
there?
Well, before you got demobbed, they sent you on different courses. They asked you what you wanted to do. When you leave the forces, like, you know. So I put down for articulated driving and diesel fitting.
Right.
So they sent you on a course then, to do that, like.
Right. Was it a good course?
Well, 6 weeks.
Right. Oh. Yeah. So quite comprehensive.
Yeah. Well, you could already drive, like, and do things like that. And you knew most of the mechanical parts of an engine, like, so it was pretty simple. Like.
You've done a few years of it. I've done 3 years of it, haven't you, really? All the way through France. So do you think that those courses were effective than in actually getting you a
job? Well, when I came out, I applied for a job with Winds at Newport.
Mm. That's transport.
Transport people. And Winds interviewed me, and he said, oh, we have them from the cradle. We have them from the school, he says. So in other words, he didn't want me. So I didn't... I finished working in a factory in Cardiff, steel fabricators.
Yeah.
They were making agricultural equipment.
Uh-huh.
So I worked there for 45 years.
Did you?
Yeah.
In Cardiff?
I ended up as a transport and dispatch manager.
Right.
I was there for 45 years.
Yeah. So really, the courses you did didn't help you get a job?
Not at all.
No.
The only thing it did give me was a class one licence.
Mm-hmm.
And... the license that I had, I could drive anything driven with its tracks, motorbike, everything. I could drive everything, like.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing it did give me, like.
Yes. Yeah. So tell me about your demob. Where did you get sent to actually sign out?
From York, I got demobbed.
York.
Okay. Yeah.
What was that experience like?
Coming home, I met a couple of my old friends from the regiment, like, on the boat. Well, we come from Cuxhaven to Hull. And on board there, this chap's the same age as myself, getting demobbed, which I hadn't seen for a couple of years because I was, from 1945 to 1947, I was in Germany, like, and they were in different regiments. So it was quite nice meeting them again, like.
Right. Yeah.
On the boat, like, coming over, other than that, I like.
So you went and actually signed out together, as it were. And then you came back on the train to South Wales.
South Wales,
yeah. What did that feel like? Because, I mean, you left it as quite a very young man, hadn't you? Knowing not a lot.
I'm all married, like.
Yeah, married and a war veteran, you know. Seen it all.
Seen it all and tried to forget it.
How did people treat you, you know, coming
all
back?
All right, lovely. I went for a couple of interviews for a job, like, and I went for the one in Cardiff. He said, yeah, start straight away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I used to travel from We were living up in Tricanna then, in what they call a split tenancy. That's one house divided by two families.
Oh, right.
Right? And you had to be in there 3 years before we came here then. Uh-huh. This is a council house. Uh-huh. And we've been there ever since.
Right.
But we've bought it, like, you know, when we had the right to buy, we bought it, like, and we've been there ever since. Mm. But the only thing we've done to the house is put central heat in. Mm. We put double glazing. And that's all we've done. We haven't done.
Yeah.
A lot of people have got fitted kitchens and all this business, but we haven't bothered. Because we've got a pantry in there, which you can keep all your stuff. You've got a cupboard in the corner where you keep all your dishes.
Yeah.
So no point. Yeah. And it's an half wall. With a kitchen where you can have your food on. And you've got my wife don't like change, so
no.
We left as it was.
Right. Yeah. But they're not lovely houses, aren't they? Yeah. Quite spacious.
But 7,350 I give for this.
Really? Goodbye.
But I've rented it for a long while, haven't I?
Yes, exactly, that's true, So.
I always remember when we moved in here, first of all, we had nothing. We had a kitchen set, bedroom suite. We bought two chairs in here and we had a little square rug here, so.
But you were young.
Times have changed, haven't they?
Yes, they have, haven't they? Yeah.
I don't know, they think they're for the better, are they? Or?
Oh, I think so.
I think people are better off, aren't they?
Yes, I think so.
I think the young stars that's coming now will suffer a little bit, like, but.
Yes, yeah. Let's see what we haven't covered here. So, did you see much of the American troops? I mean, you saw them in the Ardennes, didn't you? And briefly.
Didn't see much of them, no. Because they were different parts of the country to us, weren't they?
Yeah. Did you have an opinion about how good they were or otherwise? Or?
Well, I found them all right, very friendly. Mm. As a matter of fact, there was a young girl who was the wife's cousin. Used to go with an American.
Yeah.
She lived on Caerphilly Mountain.
Yeah.
Carl, his name was. He used to spend Lee there with them because there was a lot of Americans around this part. Mm. During the war, I suppose at Cheltenham as well, but there was a lot around here. Mm. My wife used to work in the aircraft factory up here during the war.
Yeah.
A lot of Americans, but Carl, I used to go up when we'd come home leave, and he happened to be on leave the same time. He used to go out, he's quite nice, like. Mm. But after the war, he seemed to disappear. Mm. You never heard no more from him.
Oh, right. Went off home to his wife, perhaps, yeah. Did you come across any French troops at all?
The only time I seen French troops was at Cannes. Mm-hmm. Because they were more or less French Canadians. They more or less took Cannes itself.
Right.
That's the only time I seen it.
Yeah. French. What was your opinion of the French army?
The French army? Well, you know. The French Canadians, they were fanatics, like.
Really?
All they wanted to do was kill Germans, like. Because one of them told me that when they went into Cannes, just when the invasion started, before the Cannes fallen, they were all in a mess. German officers and that having food, like, you know. He said, all I'd done, he said, was got a couple of grenades, he said, and threw them in. Whether that was true or not, I don't know. He was bullshitting me or what, I don't know, but.
So what did you think of the Russian soldiers? You must have heard.
When the war finished, there was a Russian officer with each regiment. And he had a bloke with him supposed to be his batman, but they never had batmans in the Russian army. Officer was all right, but the civilian, a bit thick, like, you know. If you had a watch like that, and you had that alarm clock, you would have that alarm clock off you, and you could have that. Because it was bigger, he thought it was better. Like. And the soldiers went round that when the Russians came into Germany, and all the flush toilets and things like that, they used to take the fittings, because they'd never seen anything like it in their own country, like, unless it was in the towns.
Yeah.
like in Moscow or something like that, but in the villages and things like that, they've never seen things like that. They were very rough, weren't they?
Yeah.
Of course, when they took Berlin, as soon as they took it, they took the Russian army out, didn't they, and put the elite in there.
Yeah. I mean, you must have seen military police along the way. You must have seen military police along the way as you went up through Normandy and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of them?
All right.
That doesn't mean all right.
Like the one at the station down there in Cardiff.
Yeah.
He had me one day.
Did he?
We're going back off leave late, like. But they're all right, man. They had a job to do, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know.
So they were generally fair, weren't they? Reasonable.
They soon break up trouble, mind, if there's any trouble about that. But as I said, I never used to go to the pubs or anything like that. Mm. I used to spend most of my free time in the naffy, playing table tennis and things like that.
Yeah.
I never drunk, like, so I didn't worry me, like.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have a regimental padre?
As a matter of fact, when I went back to Ypres, he came up to me and gave me some films, which is some of them photographs I showed you, right? But Jack Edwards didn't think I had any, but I did. I had some as well. I've got them upstairs.
Yeah.
And he said, I got something for you, Cliff. He said, come out of your tank. It was photographs. I sent them home then. Like, he had them developed and everything.
Yeah. Oh, right. So that was something he'd saved for you when you were coming back off. Yeah.
Well, he didn't know whether I was coming back or not, like, but he had his photographs. As soon as he knew I was back, like, he...
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think it was worthwhile having a padre in the regiment?
Yeah, it was good. Mm. See, the people in Ypres, when we were in Ypres, we were stationed in civvy billets. Mm-hmm. Lived with the Belgians, like.
Right.
So many soldiers to each house, like. And they were very nice people, too. Of course, they took us all around the war cemeteries and Minden Gate and Ypres itself. The people I was stopping with, the chap was a manager of a factory. And he was telling me that the Germans tried to blow up the Minden Gate, but the resistance disconnected it, like, before they left.
Yeah.
And he also told me a story about the 1418 war. He said when Ypres was rebuilt, they could only build on the old foundations. They could go up, but they couldn't go out. Everything had to be built on the old foundations. So Ypres is more or less the same as when it was before it was destroyed in the 1418 war.
Mm.
But wonderful people,
Belgians. Because they, I mean, those people who lived in Ypres, I mean, they'd had two wars on their doorstep.
Yeah, I don't know.
Doorstep. I mean, must have been dreadful.
The Polish regiment took Ypres, I think.
Uh-huh.
Polish armoured division. They went up through that way.
Right. So it must have been quite moving to you, even as a young man, to see the First War cemeteries as well.
As it, everything was as it was left, you know.
Amazing.
You stop at a place called Poppering. There's a Tock H used to be there. Well, it's still there. But you get up on top of a hill and look around. The first thing that came to my mind was, well, something has happened here. I knew the 1418 war was around it, but if I didn't know that, I said to myself, there's something, like you knew there was something that happened because things didn't seem to be the same. All the destruction that they had for the 4 years of war. But I had that feeling, like, you know, that something happened here.
Yeah.
Of course it was, I knew there was something that happened there, but it still couldn't help me feeling like that.
Yeah, amazing. So did you come into contact with them? Conscientious objectors at all when you were at home or during the...
While I was working, there was a chap there by the name of Albert Sadler, and he was a tool fitter, and he's a Londoner. So I said to him one day, he said, Albert, how the hell did you come to live down in South Wales, like? He said, I was a Bevan boy. In other words, he was a conscientious objector, like. But he said, I was a Bevan boy. He said, I worked in Abbotshead up pit. And he said, I've stopped there ever since. As a matter of fact, he's still living in Newport now.
Mm.
And he's never gone back to London. Like. Mm. But he was a conscientious objector. Like.
Mm.
But
they must have had
nice fella.
Yeah, must have had quite a hard time with
Well, he's a Bevan boy,
he was. Mining, wasn't he, all the way through?
But as I said, by trade, he was an engineer, like. Because he's a two-fitter in steel plants, like.
Yeah. What did you feel about the Comanches then? Do you think they had a right to do it, or should they have gone to war?
Everybody got their own point of view, haven't they, like, you know. If they want to be a conscripted, that's up to them, like.
Yeah.
It didn't worry me at all.
Right. Yeah. What about strikers or black marketeers and that sort of thing? Because there was quite a lot of unrest at home, wasn't there, while you were...
Well, when we were in Germany, you could get anything for cigarettes. So I think every soldier that was in the British Army in Germany was in the black market.
So what sort of things did you buy with your cigarettes then?
I sell my haircut, have a shave, but all I sell. So many cigarettes a week, I never bothered to shave myself. I used to go down to the barbers and want anything done to my teeth or the dentist. Because after the war in the in the Rhine, there was a thing called gingivitis, bleeding gums, and it was rampant. So the only cure that they had in them days was taking your teeth out. And you could catch it by washing your things in the same water somebody had got it, like, you know. So it was rampant. So I used to, I always been particular about my teeth, like. I got my own teeth now, as a matter of fact. And the only ones I lost is what I lost in Germany. Because the only cure was take them out, like.
Right.
And you used to pay them so many cigarettes and take them out.
So you still got your allowance, didn't you? 50
I don't bother with the army ones then. And in the village I was in, like, or the villages that I'd been stationed in, you get to know these people, like, and have your hair cut or things like that. Pay them in cigarettes. But when the war finished, I played rugby. I came, said to my mate, I said, that's the last cigarette I'm going to smoke. That was in 1947. And I never smoked since.
Never missed it?
I couldn't have been enjoying it, could I? Otherwise I wouldn't have given it up so easily. No problem at all. But I think I'm glad I did give it up, like, you know. My children don't smoke. The wife's never smoked. So none of my grandchildren smoke. So, you know, pretty good. But one of my son-in-laws down there is like a chimney. As a matter of fact, when he comes here, he goes outside to have a smoke. Like, well, we had a funeral just before Christmas. My brother-in-law died, you know. And I said, there's plenty of food back at the house. I said, you know, if you want to come back. And I know a few of them that smoke. Like I said, but don't forget, there's no smoking in my house. But they all came back. See about six of them out there smoking there. She lost her brother.
Yeah.
Just before Christmas is. I don't know if he went upstairs. Did you see a lot of boxes in?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Oh, that's all his stuff.
Oh, right, yeah.
Have they time to sort that out yet?
No.
He lived in a flat down in Cardiff. So I got some boxes and emptied all the stuff into them. Poured it up. It's been there ever since.
How do you think the government's looked after you, you know, as a soldier, you know?
I had £90, I think, gratuities when I came out. But otherwise, I had to look for a job and get on with life, like. But when I retired, well, in 1972, I went for a medical for every goods vehicle license because they brought a new law out.
Yeah.
So I said to the doctor, I said, I don't know, I'm a bit deaf and he's sure. He never examined my ears. So I said to him, I said, what about my ears then? He said, oh, you got something. I said, yes, I'm slightly deaf in this one. He said, that's old age. I never thought no more about it. So I was reading a paper one day about deafness. So I wrote away to the war pensions. And I guess a pension. No? I went down to Cardiff and have a medical. They gave me 50% war pension.
Oh, right.
But I should have had that right from the beginning. never thought of it like you when you're young, like, you know, yeah. Things slide. Yeah. Probably if I joined the British Legion, yeah. I'd have known all about it.
Tipped off, yeah, that's right. But, so you think you're reasonably well looked after then?
I am now, yeah.
Mm. What do you think, what sort of physical effect have you been left with from the war? I mean, you've got the deafness.
That's all.
That's all. Your legs are okay.
But this one here, when I went for a medical to go back to the regiment, a doctor examined me, and when he go like that with his finger across there, I got a numbness. And there's a little scar by here where a piece of that shrapnel must have caught a nerve or something. But he said maybe there's a bit of something in there, like about as big as a pinhead, he said, touching the nerve.
Yeah.
But he said, it's no point in opening it. He said, because in 30 years' time, he said, if anything is there, he said, it'll work its way out.
Yeah.
But it hasn't. It's still there. Like. So when if the wife touches me like that in bed, you could feel it. Like.
Oh.
But that's the only effect I have got.
Yeah.
I mean, my hands has nothing to do with, something to do with the work I was doing, like, you know. But otherwise, I've had no trouble at all. I've had, this year, I've been to the doctors and the hospital more than I've ever been in all my life. I've had everything done to me.
Yeah.
And all I went to the doctor for was, when I go back at night like that, I get a little bit of dizziness.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I thought, oh, that's vertigo, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, he'd give me a tablet. Right. But this particular doctor don't issue prescriptions, just for the sake of issuing them.
Yeah.
He said, I want you to have a couple of blood tests.
So
we ended up having cameras down everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So what do you think the mental effects of the war have been?
Never thought
you?
Much about it.
Yeah. Do you have any nightmares when you
no,
came back?
Never even talked about it. I'd never talk about it anyway, so
yeah.
You know, this is the first time I've spoken about anything like that.
Really?
The only thing that did annoy me was my brother-in-law was in the tanks as well, you see. And he was in Normandy, and he was in the Royal Inniskilling Dragoon Guards, and he was a wireless operator. Well, in January 40-45, they sent him home on leave. And of course, he had a couple of drinks, going on talking and worrying the wife, like, you know. And the war was still on, like. That's the only thing that I didn't like.
Yeah.
He started revealing things that he shouldn't reveal, like.
So what did you not tell your wife?
Pardon?
What did you not tell your wife at the time?
Well, anything about the war, I never bothered.
Really?
Yeah.
But if she asked you, you know, are you fine?
No, she never bothered. Never mentioned it.
Didn't
like
to ask, yeah.
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 Forget it.
What do you think you actually learnt from the army?
Pardon?
What do you think you learnt from the army? You know,
discipline.
That was the best
and physical thing. Fitness. Because I still do exercises now every morning.
You look fit.
I play golf, like.
Uh-huh.
I got allotments. I've had allotments since we've been here. Allotments I got up there, for 50 years I've been doing it. Well, my boy was 3 years old when we came here. He's 53 now, so.
So they taught you to be disciplined and be active.
Yes, discipline is amazing. Yeah. And taught you how to look after yourself, like.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't rely on other people to do things for you, like.
Anything else you can remember? That any other stories you remember that you'll probably think of something once I've gone?
I remember once going to the toilet with a shovel down behind a hedge, and all of a sudden I heard something approaching me, and there was two German soldiers. And they stood there with their hands on their head like this, you know. And I looked at them. I finished what I was doing. And they said, comrade, comrade. So I took them back. They had had enough, like.